What's up, everybody? Good morning. Today is Saturday. Wakey, wakey. This is, you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine on this beautiful Saturday morning. What's up, Claudine?
Good morning. Welcome to summer.
Yes, it is here.
That we just went right straight from cold weather. The sun came out a little bit, but then all of a sudden we are officially on.
From 48 degrees to 90 degrees in weeks, right?
Yeah, and it was, you know, just shortly ago we had triple digits. It was crazy. But hey, gotta love the lake.
Yeah, I mean, if California, we just, you know, we love our weather. So for those who are not in California, well, we want you to come and visit.
That's right. Come and visit and, you know, hopefully bring with you some business opportunities and help us keep control of our business community.
Well, business is booming, but we have an interesting topic for us to talk about today.
Super interesting.
Do you want to tell us what we're going to talk about today?
Really super hot topic. I know there's a lot of this, whether you're watching the national news, the local news, or just, you know, community talk. It seems like everybody wants to know, are we going into a recession?
Right.
If we're going in, when can we expect it? Why, how, and so forth. It's such a huge subject. There's no question that everybody's kind of got a different opinion about it. But, you know, at the same time, it's almost like talking about it, is it going to jinx? We've got a good economy right now that's driving business, and we're grateful for it. It wasn't too long ago. Most of us can remember, you know, just a few short years ago that business was at an all-time standstill. So you know that we've been shopping for our new location here in Modesto.
Yes, and, I heard the news.
Yeah, and so
We did locate
a really nice office building. I'm really grateful to the agent who helped me out. It really, really was proactive about solving that problem for me. And he and I talked about that and really super grateful for that. But you know, that was the whole process. The market now is much different. When we were looking for our last office space over in Turlock and, you know, what was available and what the prices were and what sellers or leasors or landlords are willing to do to get a tenant in, and what's the competition like? It is 180 degrees different than it was, you know, 2011, 10, 11, 12.
Right.
And so it just has so much of an impact.
So, are we headed into another great depression or another depression, whatever you want to call it? So there was the Great Depression of 1929 and the Great Recession of 2007.
Right.
What's next? So if you're a business owner listening to this, how should you prepare yourself? Or is it a bunch of, you know, lies, a pack of lies that people are, you know, I love this concept of fear mongering, you know, where people are like, oh my gosh, fear, fear, fear. Sometimes that's what I don't watch the news. You know, you watch the news and I walk away depressed.
Right. Or just completely stressed out. And you're wondering, you feel like your heart's beating and just, what is this?
My blood pressure is going up.
Right.
I'm not doing anything.
No,
oh,
it's
I'm
true.
Watching the news. Right.
Well, you know, panic sells. That's what the 24-hour news cycle
bleeds,
does.
It leads.
Yes.
You know, I love, you know, not necessarily a plug-in for the nightly news with David Muir.
Mm-hmm.
I love how he starts the show. He's like, hey, as we come in the air tonight, 400,000 people have died. And, you know, it, whatever the headline is, it's got my attention.
Right.
Even though I hate bad news, I want to know what happened, right? It's like this embedded nature to want to know what's going on. It's like the rubbernecking, right? Like, what's going on?
Right. We spend hours and hours in traffic jams because people are rubbernecking. I mean, particularly in LA. And you spend a lot of time in LA.
And I spend a lot of time everywhere.
Yeah. but it's true.
Don't worry. We're going to land this plane. I know it's a heady topic, but I think, you know, you should care about it. I think we cannot afford as business owners and entrepreneurs to bury our head in the sand. I think that's not the best way to do, like, pretend it's not there. It doesn't work.
No. And I was having this conversation with a client and making the comment that, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but our economic system, our governmental system is set up to be cyclical. In general, in nature.
Yep.
So, of course, when we're in a time where the economy is good, we have to somehow recognize and accept that there's going to be a cycle. So we're going to be on the other half of that at some point. So don't don't forget about it. Expect it.
Well, I think, you know, knowledge is power. It's right. One of my lines. And people who are in the know profit from downturns.
Yes.
You know, some people that make billions in war during wartime.
Yes.
I think is your attitude dictates, your mindset as a business owner dictates how you actually operate your business as you process news that are coming from the outside world.
Correct.
So speaking of news, anything happening? I know you're, you know, congratulations, you got a new place. And where
yes.
are you moving in?
We are in the next couple of weeks. Well, we should
Sweet.
Be set up. We're at 1101 Standiford, Suite A1. Very excited to be up on the North Corridor. And
I hear business is booming for your firm.
We're blessed. We're blessed.
Wow.
Working hard and blessed. And really excited to get to know the community around where our new office is. We've already started, walking the streets and knocking on doors and meeting the business owners around us. So
I'm laughing. You know why I'm laughing? Because you're going to go from working 12 hours a day to working 18 hours a day.
Oh, why not? It was so much more fun at 12. Let's add another four.
Let's not complain. I think business, this has been a great year for your firm.
Yes.
It's been a great year for mine. And it's just really understanding your business model
right.
and our business model. And this is what we do. You advise. And I think, you know, that's why the feedback is so great on our show, is because we come from different disciplines and you really, really care about knowing the laws and making businesses sustainable. Well, I do care about that. I care more about how am I going to make you be more profitable
right.
than you are today? How are you going to be more profitable tomorrow?
Right. It's funny. Okay. It's just a concept along that line. So when we talk about our most ideal clients, I mean, no matter if you're in business, no matter what you do,
yep.
you have these ideal clients.
Yes.
My sister's a high producing realtor over in the Bay Area, and she refers to them as diamond clients.
Diamond.
Yeah, the diamond clients. You know, the ones that they're great to work with, and business is good, and you know they provide a lot of business to you. Don't you just love taking that diamond in the rough client and watching them grow?
Yeah.
And they turn into your dream client.
Yes.
And it's, they weren't always, it wasn't that they were always that way, but it's that their business has grown and developed and you've been able to ride along with them and you kind of cultivate your best clients. So that's what we're excited about.
Well, great. So let's start kind of getting a little bit into it. We only have a couple minutes to the break, but here's the things that we're going to really flesh out in the next hour. We're going to talk about interest rates, unemployment rates, trends, right? The
right.
trend can be your friend, upcoming technologies and how everything affects and what you hear in the news and what you hear in the radio, what you're watching the news and how does that matter to you? But because our audience, we mostly speak to people who have a going concern with a business. You know, you have a business that you're growing, and if you're already, whether you got talked into it or it was your idea and you're driving a business, you need to know this stuff. You need to know what you're up against to be successful. So this whole thing about there was this article, there's all these articles. I mean, I went and I did a little research and, you know, hey, is the collapse, another collapse coming? And there were like hundreds of articles, right? People
right.
are writing.
It's really.
I don't get it. Why? When you told me about the topic, I was like, really? Is that's what's going on? And you're right.
And I think it's like, again, we kind of instinctually know that our economy is cyclical, and we know that we've had a good economy for a while, and business has been growing, and we are kind of almost like, okay, here it comes.
But wait. When is the next election year?
Well, so that's what I want to know from you. What is tied to this? What are the things that we need to look for? I mean, we help businesses protect themselves and get set up to weather storms. So we want to make sure that your contracts are in line so that you can have a successful accounts receivable.
Yes.
Okay.
So, you're speaking my love language.
Right. So, you know, one of the things we as business people who are not financial analysts like you want to know what are the signs? Do we see the signs? Are they there?
Right.
Is it coming?
Right. So great. So there's great things that we're going to flesh out. And I want to make sure that you are also looking at as it pertains to your business. Everything have to filter, you know. A funny thing, I was at an event sponsored by the SBA for lower middle market companies. Anyway, I'm going to tell you.
Tell me all about it when we come back.
But we need to go to break. So right now you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Are you awake? I know it's Saturday. I know you're driving, but make sure you have plenty of coffee. We're about to get started right now. You are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine and out of beautiful Central Valley, California, Power Talk. Hey, so I'm going to read this to you, see what you think.
Okay.
In the United States, so if the United States had an economic downturn on the scale of the Great Depression of 1929,
okay,
your life would change dramatically. So we're about to put things in perspective. One out of every four people you know would lose their job. The unemployment rate would quintuple from around an average about 5% to 25%. Economic output would plummet 25%. And it would fall near a $20 trillion level. From a $20 trillion, that's a lot of zeros, to nearly $14 trillion. Instead of inflation of about 2%, deflation would cause prices to drop. And the consumer price index fell 27% from 1929 to March 1933. So this is what it looked like had you been around 1929, right? Remember the whole concept of cash and carry and what?
Right.
It literally transformed the society of the time.
It did. I mean, I don't remember it, but we definitely remember hearing about it.
We were not around, that's for sure.
No, but there's a lot of lessons to be learned from that period of time. I mean, so, fundamentally affected everything.
I know this fact. So the first one, right? Unemployment. Such a key indicator. Unemployment right now, it's doing great.
Right.
Right. So, but let me take you back to 1993 when I first moved into California right out of college. I'm like, woo, let's just, you know, just
sunshine and beaches.
Yeah, let's just California dreams, right?
Right.
Guess what? I couldn't find a job for a year. Unemployment rate was 12%.
Yeah.
I remember distinctly that there were, for every job you applied to in 1993, there were 100 people wanting the same job that probably had better credentials than you and me, right? That is what 12% looks like. But we're talking about 25%. What is the likelihood of us hitting 25% anytime soon?
Right. And consider we're at 3.6 right now.
3.6. Hello.
3.6.
So if you're thinking about that the bottom is going to fall out next year, well, we're about to debunk the whole thing right now.
Okay.
But remember what I said? When is the next election year?
Next year.
Next year. So what the two parties are doing, the Democrats and Republicans, they're basically posturing. How do we angle the different topics? You know, immigration, which is a hot topic.
Right.
I mean, immigration alone fills
hours and hours
of TV every day.
Right.
Right. But that's just then the economy, right? Whoever controls the economy sets the tone. Well, everybody thinks they can do a better job. But the facts are the facts, right? So unemployment rate is, what is it again?
3.6.
All right. So
in May of
2019. Woo. Wow. So economic output would plummet 25%. Last time I checked, our economic output is doing pretty well. We're talking about trillions and trillions would have to change. And inflation about around 2% would cost prices to drop. Now, I know that we have inflation. What is our inflation right now? Do you happen to know?
No, I don't. But I know that there's discussion right now about the Fed lowering the interest rates.
Interesting. So this is what it looks like, right? So interest rates, what pushes, you know, a lot of, you know, the Federal Reserve setting up the rates. And usually what happens is, you know, they set up the rate and everybody follows suit. So for every quarter of a percentage that goes up or down, there's massive ripple effect throughout the markets because banks buy, you know, at the Fed rate. And, you know, an FDIC-insured bank can actually loan up to $9 for every dollar they actually have in depository.
Right, because their rate right now is 2.4%. Right.
So think about it, right? So if you're a business owner going for a loan, and we're going to talk about it in another topic, that's a topic unto itself, banks profit from the spread, right? In which they're in the arbitrage business, just like a lot of businesses, right? So they buy low, they sell high, or they sell a little higher. Right now, I can tell you the lending business is doing well. Particularly the commercial business, when you're on the commercial side of the business and lending to the ag, it depends. Different cities have different flavor of industries. Where we are right now, ag is big, logistics is big, service delivery is big, technology is big, and everybody's getting a loan.
Okay.
Everybody's looking for a loan.
Don't the banks make more money when the interest rates are higher?
It depends, right? It depends. Depends on their spread, right? If
so, they're borrowing it at whatever the rate is, and then they're selling it off at a higher rate.
Correct. But if the rates keep going up, well, the profit spread and people are demanding, supply and demand. I want a loan, but your prime plus two is not as sexy as prime plus one from another bank.
Right.
So they're all competing for the same spread. It's a different flavor. And the appetite for a bank to on risk. Right. And risk mitigation.
Right. And so as we came out of the financial crisis in 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, there's so many different names for that period of time. But in any event, they were taking higher risks and giving out a lot of loans, and people were taking them at higher rates.
Wait, okay. You're talking about 2007, 8, yeah. 9. Well, you know what happened is a Freddie Mac Fannie Mae fiasco.
Right.
And, I had a feeling that this stated income deal from Washington Mutual, I felt it almost immediately after. Then I heard about, 100% LTV and
right.
stated income, which
so
means
explain what that is.
Stated income?
Stated income and LTVs.
Okay. So
for those who.
Okay. Great. Great. So this is, so the way it works, a bank will give you a loan and a collateralized asset on if you're dealing in real estate, it's the actual real estate, the property.
The house is the security.
It's the security pledged against the loan and usually in 30 years. We went back in the old days, there was no such thing as 30-year loans. They were like 15-year loans. They were 10-year loans. So we forget that things have been different. So we think that the 30-year loan, fixed loan, has always been there, but it hasn't. But then it became the 40-year loan. So banks will lend against the value of the value, and the value of the house changes, right?
Right.
So as changes go up, people can leverage. So 100% loan to value means that if your house is worth $500,000, you can literally borrow up to the value of the property.
Right.
Which means it's very risky business for the bank. Correct? Right. What happens if what happens when values plummet? And then you still have a loan for $500,000, but your house is worth now $400,000.
Right.
Guess who's at risk?
The bank.
Bank. And you.
Well, you are. Your credit.
Your
because
credit.
Because if it goes upside down or foreclosure.
So what happened in 2007? I had a bunch of real estate, right? And everybody, they thought that, this was going to, real estate values are going to keep getting higher forever, right?
Forever.
So what used to be a house for $120,000 became a house for $161,000, $180,000. And people thought, oh my gosh, is it possible that we could have a $200,000 home in some parts of Los Angeles? It's unthinkable. Then 200 came, and then 250. And then the average sales price was 300. I'm talking about the LA market because I was there.
Right.
And when you bought a $300,000, oh my gosh, it's so expensive, until the next $400,000 home came, and then it became $500,000. And then guess what? We have a different problem now because the prices are so high. Nobody
can afford it.
So back to the LTV. So banks.
Loan to value.
Then we went to 125 LTV.
Right.
And the stated income. So stated income means that the bank pulls your credit and say your FICO is 720, 740. You have pretty good record of paying your debts. I like that. And how much do you say you make? I make $200,000 a year. Okay, great. So they start to calculate the debt to income ratio and all those things. And how are they going to justify their income? Well, it's a stated income, so they're going to price you a little higher. But then you tell them that is what it is, and it's your word. So we're going to get maybe we need 3 months worth of bank statements. Maybe we need 6 months. And you move money around and you let it season for a while. And all of a sudden you manufacture $200,000 worth of income.
Right.
With no basis.
Right.
Stated income means is whatever you say it is.
And I think everybody who's gone and tried to get purchase a house since the mortgage crisis or meltdown or whatever we want to call it has felt that, because now banks are not just assuming
it doesn't happen anymore.
No, you have to come in with you know, good, solid proof. And they're not just taking any kind of statement that you can afford it.
It's just bad business.
It is bad business. People have to be qualified.
And you know what? We all at some point fell trapped for that. I thought, wait a minute, I should know better. But you know what happens? We have, as humans, this inherent nature of the mob mentality.
We do. And we as business owners have an inherent problem of qualifying for loans. So for a period of time, they made it very easy for the business owner with the stated income. And we bought property with it. You bought property with it. Most anybody who's listening right here bought property during that period of time because it was your opportunity to get in. I think it was incumbent upon those purchasing land at that time and using stated income loans to really be honest with themselves about what they could afford, what they were, you know, comfortable with their payment, comfort level was with their payment. And so many people did not. They were people who had, you know, ideas of finally having that, you know, 3,000 square foot house with a pool in the backyard and, you know, brand new and in the new neighborhood and all of that stuff. And the reality is, you know, obviously it was more than most could afford, but certainly when there was a little start, you know, the weather started to change on the job market. People weren't ready to weather the storm. And that's what I hear people talking about now. Is this coming back? Is it going to be that bad? I know in looking back when we were in business during that period of time and the market, we kind of saw it coming. I remember like you being very nervous about 125% loan to value.
I was.
Purchasing and thinking, gosh, that just can't sustain itself. So we kind of knew it was coming, but never knew it was going to be that bad.
Okay, so speaking of job growth, right? Which, remember, we talked about unemployment rate and interest rate, but I was reading in this article, job growth continues to be brisk, with the average monthly growth expected to be 184,000 in 2019 and expected 139,000 in 2020. Those are good numbers. Those are solid numbers. But here is what's happening. Okay, I'm going to tell you, if you're listening, you need to be aware of the trends. This whole thing about the gig economy, where there is a shift. If you poll after poll of employees come up with this about the same results, 70% of people hate their jobs.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
They need to start a business.
Well, funny thing you say that, right? So this trend is only moving on that direction. I think this is the unstoppable train. There is a bunch of things that are colliding. Technology, ever-increasing minimum wage.
Yeah.
Right? Fast food chains testing robots because the increasing litigation around labor and wage and hour law, which is one of your favorite topics, right?
Right.
We're in a collision course for change. Now, we got this people who are dissatisfied at what they do for whatever reason.
Right.
And they see that the grass looks greener on the other side. And you got 77 out of 10 employees thinking, oh, my gosh, I got to do something else. And then you got these platforms, these new ecosystems, the Ubers, the Lyfts, the Airbnbs. You know, they hear the stories of companies, you know, of individuals earning $300,000 a year, and you don't longer have to own a home to actually play in the Airbnb model. And all of these disruptions, all these technological disruptions in certain industries are ripe for causing change in the whole employment market, in this whole gig economy. And then you, go ahead.
What was it, to add to that, the when people are feeling more comfortable, they're more likely to take a risk. And so if you have been in a job, and maybe it's not your favorite job, maybe you don't really like the job, but you've been making good money, you've been able to pay your bills for a number of years, and you know, maybe you've got a little bit of money socked away and you know, things are kind of comfortable, you're more likely to take that jump. Whereas when the market was just terrible,
good point,
people were so afraid to make a move and lose their job because they were looking around them seeing people losing their jobs and oh my God, they're losing their houses and their cars and everything else.
Interesting comment that you said. So the more confident you are, the more willing you are to take risks.
Yes.
When are you confident? When the economy is doing better, right? When, despite the fear mongering, all the things that you're hearing out there, if you're looking at your paycheck and I'm like, hey, I'm making pretty good money. I have all this pay time off saved up. I can use all these things. Maybe I should try something. You become bullish on the market.
Right.
You realize, okay, there's an opportunity. So if you're thinking at the outset, we said, hey, is the next Great Depression coming? The jury is out, but my guess is no.
I think I feel the same way because I think that there's a really unique storm. I think everybody's feeling a storm, but they're misidentifying it as the recession storm.
All right. Hold your thoughts. All right, guys. We need to go to a break, I've been told. So you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Leo Landaverde with Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Hi, Claudine.
How are you?
Good. I think I have way too much coffee today. So much.
Never
more.
Enough. Are you
never
kidding?
Never enough. Hey, I got that article that said that this whole research that was done in England, half a million people, that the more coffee you drink, the better you do. Oh my gosh, I took that and I put it on the refrigerator.
Right.
And I can't stop.
Justifies everything.
Yeah, I sleep standing up now.
Little research. Yeah, exactly. Little research will solve all of our problems. I know that it seems like every time a new research thing comes out, either drinking coffee is good for you or bad for you, and drinking wine is good for you or bad for you.
Mob mentality,
and I'm just
going
to do what I do.
I just do you.
Yeah, that's it. I do.
So back to this whole fear-mongering thing. Hey, we don't want to instill any fear, but I think you should know from a couple of business owners, what we feel like, and you take everything we hear, you can double check it, but I think the future looks bright. So let's keep talking on this whole thing. We talked about interest rates and unemployment rate. Those are the indicators. Whenever something is about to happen, you know, like when the storm is coming, usually there are certain things that happen, you know, the temperature drop or when something is about to happen, there are indicators. Well, we're trying to give you some indicators right now so you are well informed.
Right.
The economy is doing well. The interest rates are doing well. Unemployment rate is low. Okay, what else is up? Stock market volatility. So let me kind of read this little bit of research. Volatility spooks people.
Right.
Right? Particularly
right.
Investors.
Right.
Right? Most investors don't have the stomach to hang on with something. So when the building is on fire, everybody's out, right?
Right.
But the shrewd investors, the businesses, that's when they go in to buy.
Right.
So somebody always profits from something. Remember
right.
that.
Right? Right. Right.
So keep that in mind as I read this. Volatility spooks investors. When the Dow swings 400 points in a single day, stock market losses suffered during the 2008 stock market crash were devastating. The Dow dropped 53% from its high of 14,043 in October 2007 to 6,954 on March 5th, 2009. It dropped 777 points during the intraday trading in September 29, 2008, this largest one-day drop ever. Investors who lost money are understandably still spooked by that experience. You know when something bad happens, you recoil?
Yes.
It's like when you break a bone, you don't want to use that arm for a while?
Right, right.
You've
been in a bad car accident?
You don't want to drive anymore? You want to take your sweet time on driving again?
Right.
This is exactly, we have emotions. We feel stuff. We're not robots. We know, and this whole thing plays out. So the fluctuations of the stock market follow a business cycle. So in early 2016, stock prices plummeted. Investors lost trillions, not billions, trillions. And some companies went into recession. That followed losses in 2015 when almost 70% of all U.S. investors lost money. According to some, it was the worst years of stocks since 2008. So we're like 8 years later. Almost 1,000 hedge funds shut down and junk bonds were crashing. 5 of the 10 largest one-day point drops in the Dow occurred in 2018. The largest ever one-day point drop in history of the Dow occurred on February 5th when it dropped 1,175 points. There was a time that the Dow never reached 10,000, right? That's the distant past. This was followed closely by the second largest ever drop on February 8th when it lost 1,032. The three-day other massive one-day drops were 831 points on October 10th, 724 points on March 22nd, and 665 points on February 2nd. So this is my theory on this whole start. This is my personal opinion.
Okay.
I don't invest in things I don't understand.
Okay.
You know what Warren Buffett says? That's really right. That a lot of people get into stocks just because they think somebody, a friend of a friend, told them that, hey, you got to put your money in Apple because it's going to keep going up forever.
Right.
You know that the money in stock is not made when the stock is at $100 a share.
No.
The people who bought it at $2, those already made the money.
Right.
And got out.
Right.
90% of people. So, you know, if you use the whole bell curve on everything, including the stock market, will tell you that 10% of the people will never touch it. They're just afraid of it.
Right.
80% will invest when everybody's investing.
Right.
And lose money when everybody loses money. Only 10% of the investors actually know what they're doing.
So, is then the moral of the story is to be in that position when it all drops.
So if you knew, you know,
in that position, meaning you're heavy cash or heavy.
Well, you know, people say, hey, the petrodollar, right? And, you know, the dollar has not been pegged with the gold standard for a long time. And it went to the petrol and became the petrodollar, petroleum. That's a whole other thing. But the people who know George Soros.
Right.
Who single-handedly collapsed the pound, the British pound, many, many years ago. He actually made more money, and I think he made billions in one day, more than any other person, just because he watches the trend. He's a student of the game. Again, I don't understand currency, so I'm not going to invest in currency.
Right. Bitcoin.
I cryptocurrency. It may be the greatest. It's the Wild West from what I hear. I don't know much about it. I don't want to advise him. I won't get into it.
Right.
I only invest in the things that I know. So I don't even pay attention to that. I know in my capabilities in entrepreneurship and helping other business owners be successful because I understand metrics and I understand certain business cycles and I understand financials and I understand the certain industry verticals.
Right.
I invest in those because I understand them. Same with you, right? You understand the legal trends. You understand where things are at. Our business is booming. Your business is booming. For every business that is going under, there are others that are actually doing well. So I think stop listening and start reading.
Right.
You got to start reading, you know. You got to be over.
Know your world.
You got to be a student of the game. And you got to stop feeding your mind with junk.
Right.
Right? I read, I listen to podcasts. You know, you got to keep your mindset up. So that's the whole thing on the stock market. Oil prices have also been volatile. You know, they rose 50. You know, we can go all these roads and where is it going to lead, right? Interesting thing. Listen to this. When investors get spooked, banks get spooked.
Right. Makes sense.
Banks saddle this whole thing about, let me kind of read to you this. So the financial crisis, let's finally kind of go over it. So the financial, what happened in 2008, right? It seems so long ago, but I think it bears in mind because that was truly, it wasn't a depression, it was a recession, right? It was the Great Recession.
Right.
The 2008 financial crisis weakened the economy structure. No kidding, right? It faces future growth, you know, because of what happened. The housing collapse was worse in the recession than in the Great Depression. I didn't know that part.
No, it was. It was significantly because the housing prices fell during the Great Depression, only fell 24% roughly, you know, on average, whereas during the Great Recession, they went down 31.8%.
Really?
It was far more drop in price and land value. But, you know, then without getting into the bundled mortgages and all of that, but, you know, just kind of touching back on what we were saying earlier was that the ability to get mortgages and then people were not able to make their payments because they really weren't honest with themselves about their actual income. Pretty soon, a bunch of houses get foreclosed on. Pretty soon, the market is flooded with foreclosures. And foreclosures always sell at less than, you know, the market rate. I mean, that's the nature of a foreclosure. And so those folks who were heavy with cash, because when you go to the foreclosure auction, you buy in cash. You don't get a mortgage. You literally have to put your money up right there and then at the auction. So those folks who were heavy with cash and could make those purchases were able to really capitalize. Because once you bought the house cash, you had no mortgage. You could go get a mortgage on that house if you had good credit and you weren't overvaluing the mortgage itself. So if the house was, if you spend $100,000 cash, that's, let's just say the house is worth $100,000, you could turn around and recoup $80,000 of it and then turn around and go buy again.
Wow. So speaking of real estate, in real estate, when is it that you make money on real estate?
When you buy.
Right.
Not always made. No, always made on the buy.
Right. So those savvy investors. So because of you invest in the things you understand, I favor real estate.
Always.
I understand real estate.
Right.
Right. And had I known what I know now back in the 90s, when I bought a bunch of houses, I was buying retail. Right.
Right.
And getting loans and 90% LTV and that whole nine. True investors will actually buy wholesale.
Right.
So they buy 45, 50 cents on the dollar. You know, the even savvier investors would actually buy the land, build on it, and sell it. Those are the real smart people.
Well, that's true. And I'll tell you, even now, the foreclosure market, the auction market, is a very, very tough market. You're really not seeing the discounts that you used to see. There's a lot of players who are trying to saw how good it got then and are trying to jump in that market now, and it's really a difficult thing to do.
Why? Because in any business cycle, there's always the leaders of the visionaries, ones that figure out, oh my gosh, I can actually make money on house flipping.
And then by the time everybody else figures it
80%,
out,
80%, then the 80% come and says, hey, I need to make some money.
Right.
And then they flood the market.
Right.
And they squeeze out the profits.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you had a bidding frenzy, and this homeowner that has a house free and clear now wants to hold on because he's getting 3 or 4 phone calls from all these wholesalers, and he's like, I don't want to sell my house for 50 cents on the dollar anymore.
Right.
I want to sell it for 75 cents on the dollar.
Well, the bidding war that happens at the auction, you know, that in it is a phenomenon in and of itself, is people get caught up in the bidding, and the next thing you know, I've got to have that house. I've got to have that house. And the guy across the way from you, he's got to have it too. And there's no control over it.
So I think you know the answer to this, but I think it bears asking. So is the home that you live in an asset or a liability?
It's an asset if you own it outright.
Ah. So my good friend Robert Kiyosaki from Rich Dad Poor Dad, right?
Right.
It was really mind-boggling to me because of this whole thing about commercial property versus residential.
Right.
In commercial, when you're actually evaluating, you're evaluating the income or loss of that property. And then you look at the building. But it's a business, right?
Right.
When you buy a house, it's money coming into the house or out, going out? It's going out to service the debt that you have, right? And
right.
Then you have to the property taxes, then the insurance that you have to have.
Right.
Then you live in it, then you get to use, you get a little bit of write-off on it. But I think it's understanding that whatever you get into, you need to understand that industry, that thing. So that I was largely unaffected with this whole financial crisis on the stock market just because I don't put all those, my eggs in that one basket.
Well, it seems like, we, through that whole thing, the people that stayed and just, you know, while they looked at their balance sheets and their balance sheets were upside down and they had lost a ton of money in the market, those that stayed the course and didn't get out have now recouped.
Right.
Okay. I know people who unloaded 401ks, who pulled all their money out. They were just inexperienced and panicked.
Hey, guess what? Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leon Claudine. We're back. Welcome back. Listening to, if you just tuned in, this is Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. We're here every Saturday at 10 a.m. dishing it out in business and legal topics.
Yes. And actually talking about something that's really, really on everybody's mind. And I think you really touched on a really important point.
I did?
You did. You did. We're gonna give you the little credit on that.
Oh, nice.
I know. Take it when you can.
Yes.
It's just that we do have an emotional history. We have emotional memory. And we, I know certainly here in the Valley, so many people went through very, very difficult times. Losing your home to foreclosure is really, really difficult.
Yep.
Emotional. The creditors, the calling, the phone calls, the you know, feeling just awful because you couldn't pay your bills. And I know so many people who went through it that we do have an emotional memory. So when times are good, we kind of maybe have a tendency to look back and just be nervous that this isn't going to last. And while to some extent it's never going to always last because we are designed to be a cyclical economy. It
yes.
goes up and it goes down. It ebbs and flows. And some days are better than others, or months, or you know, quarters or years are better than others. And so what we're doing with our clients really is to help them, and this is what you're doing with your clients, is to
yep.
help them build the business so that your foundation and your framing is so incredibly strong. You have a good business ratio in terms of revenue streams. You have your books are in order. Your accounts receivable are is in order.
Yep.
We're not leaving money on the table. We're making sure that you know
yep.
people are paying on time, and we're paying our bills on time, so that when the weather does come, we don't just get washed away. We're not at such a great extent of risk. Yes, risk is important. Yes, risk is how we grow. Taking on debt is how we grow. But do we want to be overextended? Always want to remember that the ball can drop, and what's it going to take to recover if that ball drops?
Good point. Good point. So I think, you know, I'm still, you know, I love what I do.
Right.
I love teaching. I love instructing and guiding business owners and entrepreneurs. So I just finished up a financial class for business owners that are lower middle market companies, you know, between 2 and 20 million. And here in the Central Valley, sponsored by the SBA. And we were talking about key performance indicators. And,
right.
And, you know, there's a bunch of 20 of the up and coming stars of in California and different industries. And they were all like, oh my goodness, what we didn't know that we needed to know is that, where do you learn this stuff? You know, they don't teach you that in college, actually, how to actually run a business.
Right.
And this is this whole thing, you know, with the whole education system, that you learn theory, but nobody really teaches you how to actually do things.
Right. And oh, that's law school. For
right?
any attorneys who are out there listening, I'm sure that they probably just chuckled right now, because in law school, we learn theory, but we don't learn how to go file a case.
Right.
Or actually, you know, you rely on your supervisor when you get out of law school to teach you that in many occasions.
The business of law.
Right.
Right. And how to be a lawyer, and how to do it right, and how to not to, you know, embarrass yourself in front of your clients. So, and I mean, and this is really what we're passionate about. So, I mean, we've seen double-digit growth every year just because we tell people the truth. I mean, they don't have to hire us for us to. I can look at a set of financials, and within 5 minutes, I can tell you, hey, gosh darn it, your ratios are out of whack. Do you know that you're about 2 heartbeats away from heart attack in your business? They go, what? So, if you have any questions about that, look us up. Find us on the internet at www.greenlandhq.com, GreenlandHQ.com. And I highly endorse my good friend and colleague, Claudine.
Well,
and where can they find you?
We are at sharon-law.com, and that's sharron-law.com. And you can now find us in Modesto. Well, actually, doors will be open in the next couple of weeks, but we are now going to be up on Stanford, and really looking forward to getting to know our Modesto community as well.
And beyond.
And beyond.
So that's nothing stopping you, Claudine.
No.
You're putting opening more offices. Who knows? I mean, the future looks bright for you. So yeah,
we want to just keep helping those business owners get protected, stay stable, and be ready, because it's just nothing but storms out there.
So 2020, is the bottom going to fall out again?
I just don't see it.
I don't see it.
And there's so many people who do. And there's probably people who are, you know, driving down the road screaming at their radio right now. And that's, I completely understand and would love to hear from you.
Yeah, we want to hear what, you know, what your thoughts are. I think as it pertains to you and what you should care about. And, you know, if you're thinking about starting a business, is this the right time? When is the right time? You know, I always, when people ask me, Leo, do you think 2019 is a good year to start a business? I always answer by saying, well, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the next best time is today. So today is the good day for you to start a business.
Right.
It will always be today. It's not tomorrow. It's today.
And honestly, if you are, you know, perhaps at a job and you're thinking that there is a business out there, I want to start it, but what, you know, what if everything falls apart? I'm afraid to quit my job. You know, look at what it is you're wanting to do.
Right.
And what is it that you have a passion for? And the old adage is, you know, if you do something you love, you don't work a day in your life. You actually do. Let's be real.
We got news for you. You're going to put in the time.
You're going to put in the time. But you're going to enjoy it. You enjoy the process. It's not about just the end result. It's about the process, the getting through it, coming home after a hard day and you know, kind of thinking, yeah, we did it. We conquered it today. So think about what you're wanting to get into and how that would fit into today's economy. Again, you brought up all of
the trends
that are happening in the Ubers and the tech and the ability to get your product out through the internet, which is going to completely revolutionize itself again in the next, say, 5 to 7 years. What it is today, we will have no idea what it's going to look like in 5 to 7 years. So be a part of it.
Hey, great point. I think, you know, we only have a couple minutes left, but one thing that I want you to start really looking at, whatever business you're in, you got to be looking at this following trends: artificial intelligence,
mm-hmm.
and how is this going to disrupt the markets. Also, this whole, the reshaping of the retail industry. A few weeks ago, we had a show about, you know, whatever happened to Blockbuster and, you know, and Netflix. But there's another evolution coming in. The companies that became the giants in the internet are coming into the retail world and basically blending the two, this whole Amazon buying Whole Foods, and they want to have a footprint in the retail space. Retail is not going away. It's just being shaped differently.
It's unintended consequences. There's things that happen that we just didn't plan to happen, but they happened anyway. So if you can be that person who looks for the unintended consequences and capitalize on it.
Right.
People didn't realize what a market was going to be created for homes at the auction.
Mm.
They just didn't realize. I mean, people bought homes. People have always bought homes at the foreclosure auctions. But when the mortgage meltdown happened, the unintended consequence is it opened up this incredible market that you could go and you could, you know, purchase houses and you could, you know, modify them and flip them and, you know, rehab them and so forth. It created an entirely new market. That market right now is rather saturated.
So what do you do? So that alone is a conversation for another day, but I tell anybody who is flipping and making boatloads of money, you're going to have tax consequences. You got to be wise about that. But I also mm-hmm. want to put your cash at work in some passive income. When do you exit the rat race? When your expenses equal your passive income. So all of us are on a race to get out of the rat race.
Right.
So even, you know, people sometimes underestimate that, you know, hey, I want to get out of a job, so I'm going to buy me a franchise. And the only thing that they do is buy themselves another job. So you got to understand, okay, so here's another trend. This whole thing about the evolution of the employment mindset and the gig economy.
Right.
And those industries and those technology is always going to keep disrupting. Expect your industry. Think about it. If you're in an industry today, can it be disrupted by technology? If so, could you become the agent of change?
So
as a business owner in an industry,
so
that is ripe for change?
I was in Fresno yesterday meeting with a mutual friend of ours, and we were driving through downtown Fresno, and he was pointing out to me these buildings that are going up that are like social work centers.
Yeah, like WeWork kind of things. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's certainly not happening here yet, at least not that I know of.
It's gone.
But explain that a little bit. What is really, it's like a social workplace.
You know, this whole experimentation, and I think we're going to be running out of time for it, but this whole thing about, you know, the workspace is changing.
Right.
So people used to just go to work and go home.
Right.
Well, now people are not going home after work. They're staying around and they want to mingle. They want to have a drink after work. They don't want to walk to somewhere. They want open floor, open spaces. And this whole thing, I think the jury is out with this whole co-working situation and this incubation, quasi-incubators, in which you are at a workplace where you actually pay a little bit of rent, but you give up some of your privacy.
Right.
But you get to play with other people, and it stimulates intellectually to some of you. I don't know if I could do it.
Right. And so the concept is that there is activities built within the building, basketball, and different types of activities, and social gathering that is generated the way the buildings are constructed. So small business owners or micro business rent space there. They have the ability to go, you know, have their internet, have their desk, you know, that type of stuff. But the building is also created for a social space. And so that the idea is that this is going to create a creative environment that people are going to clamor for.
Well,
I think the jury's out too. I know that this is an idea over in the Bay Area with the big tech companies, and you know,
we raised hundreds of millions of dollars on this concept, and I think the concept is not going away. I think it's being explored. You know, we're at this next frontier of change. So look out for trends and how they can benefit. So so to bring it back home, is a recession or a depression coming our way? I don't think so. I think you ought to be wise as a business owner and look at what trends you can use to your advantage and grow your business and be profitable and sustainable. Does that sums it up? What do you think?
Absolutely.
Well,
solid.
Well, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. We had a great show today. We love to hear back from you. Reach us out online. And have a great weekend. Business and Legal Talk with Leon Claudine. We're out.
Thank you.